Who remembers something or anything from yesterday's class? Some quite interesting and in some cases difficult purports. That's one thing I remember. Yes. Yes. And he's steadfast like the Malaya Hills. Thank you. Anyone else remember something? We should not eat more than required. Yes. Good one. But we shouldn't make sure that no one else is eating more than required. Then we get into trouble. As long as we keep those things directed towards ourselves. Yes. Yes. What do you think about that? Long time. Yes. And is, and huh? I thought one of our years is 1,000 years of the, one of 1,000 of our years equal one of a day of the demigod, something like that. Must be, huh?
Our years, one day.
Yes, 1 year, 1 day. So 365 of our days is equal to one of their years. No, the other 365 years is equal to 1 year. Yes? Set. And then there's then there are the nights. What does that mean? Unflinching devotion for Krishna. Pure attraction. Can one be purely attracted to Krishna and not have unflinching devotion? So the important word in that is pure, because it's very possible to be attracted. Just like there was a thief, and this happened with both Lord Chaitanya, but especially with Krishna. There was a thief who heard that Krishna, he was far, far away from Krishna, but during Krishna, I think it was during Krishna's times, or maybe after even, after. He heard that there was Krishna who lived in Vrindavan. He was a young boy and he had many jewels. So he was very attracted to Krishna, but he wanted to steal the jewelry of Krishna. But because he was attracted to Krishna, despite his impure motive, he actually saw Krishna. He actually took Krishna away and tried to steal his jewels. And he said, "My dear boy, you give me all your jewelry, your bangles and your necklaces." And Krishna said, "No, my father will be very angry if you take away my jewels and necklaces. Give them, huh? Your mother, his father." If I remember correctly, that's what I think I heard Prabhupada say. Maybe I remember father. But both would be unhappy, certainly. So it's possible to be attracted to Krishna, but not be purely attracted. But pure attraction, any attraction is good. This is described in the beginning of the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, in the first chapter. Narada Muni tells a verse, I can't remember it, but Kama Krodha, for any reason to be attracted to Krishna, focuses the mind on Krishna. And this is extremely purifying. But yet, the devotional server, for it to be devotional service, pure devotional service, it has to be free from any motivation. It has to be pure. The desire has to be to please Krishna. So that, in one sense, was the essence of what we heard yesterday. How King Malayadwaj practiced the process of devotional service. He was a great devotee, and he practiced the process of devotional service that made his devotion increase. And the devotional service by Rupa Goswami, it is described, it is divided into two parts. Sadhana and sadhya, or three parts, Rupa Goswami describes it. sadhana bhakti, or the practice, the different practices that brings the goal, the sadhya. And the sadhya, or the goal, is prema, or love for Krishna, or bhava bhakti, and then prema, love for Krishna. So sadhana, nitya sadasya bhavasya prakatam riddhi sadhyata. That the practices of devotional service bring the result of prema bhakti. So there were seven different practices of devotional service. I think it's fading again. Maybe turn the volume up a little bit, please. Seven different practices of devotional service come into the practice of vidhi bhakti, or according to the rules and regulations, and sakyam and atmanivedanam, the full giving of oneself. These are in the category of ragamag, or spontaneous attraction to Krishna. By practicing vidhi bhakti or vaidhi bhakti, then one becomes purified. Purified means one's impurities are removed, and simultaneously, as one's impurities are removed, that means desires other than anyabhilasita, sunyam, the desires other than serving Krishna with devotion become sunya, zero. And by practicing that type of bhakti, the very, very strong and powerful, spontaneous bhakti arises. If one doesn't practice the rules and regulations, if one just acts whimsically, does whatever he feels like doing, then how will the heart become purified? The heart, in fact, won't become purified. So one practices vaidhi bhakti, and then gradually, if one doesn't commit offenses, then one's attraction to Krishna develops. It should develop. It must develop. Now, as a result of Malaya Dwaja's practices, he became fully pure and fully in touch with the super soul. And we read that question that Maitreya had asked early in the third canto, or Vidura had asked early in the third canto. What could one do that brings one to get direct instructions from the super soul? Krishna also answers this question in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhajatam pratipurvakam, by worshipping me with great priti, or great love, then the dami buddhi yogam tam yena mama upayanti te. Then Krishna explains, I give the instructions, the intelligence, the buddhi yoga by which one can come to Krishna. So we want to develop our affection for Krishna. This can't be artificially done. But how does one develop affection for anyone? One has to spend time with that person. And if that person is worthy of affection, then naturally we develop affection for that person. What makes one develop affection for another person? What quality in them makes us develop affection for them when we associate with them? What quality do they have that attracts us or makes us develop affection? And so Krishna is very beautiful, certainly, so we could say we become attracted to him, just like naturally we're attracted to any beautiful person. But if that beautiful person has terrible qualities, is very selfish, very quickly, despite their beauty, we become unattractive, repulsed by that person. What qualities in Krishna attract us to him? This could be a very personal thing. Yes?
Trust.
Trust, that he's trustworthy. What does it mean to be trustworthy?
Trust, it's like, can I say something personal?
Well, yes, that's what we want.
I'm new to Krishna consciousness.
So what quality in Prabhupada makes you trust him? Because if you trust someone, then gradually the relationship develops. And in fact, that's such an important one. Unless there is trust, there is no relationship. You can't have a relationship with someone who you don't trust, in fact. So, wait a second. You already spoke. We have to let others speak too. So what quality in Prabhupada makes you trust him?
I have a big faith in him because he did give me some instruction that I followed and it really did help me.
And what was that instruction?
All the instructions actually that he gave were very beneficial for me.
Yes.
Did help me find.
So you followed his instructions and then gradually trusted him.
I tried as much as I can.
Okay, very good. And upon that you build other things. Good. So Krishna also must be naturally trustworthy. We follow his instructions and we get a result. And that helps one develop a relationship. What else?
First.
Yes, that is perhaps the point in that. That when someone loves you, naturally you develop a relationship with that person. Because, and you trust that person too. I mean, to the degree that he's competent also. But certainly love from that person. Anyone else wish to say a quality that makes one love another person? No?
Reciprocation.
Reciprocation, what do you mean? Be a little more explicit, please. So you say something to him, to Krishna, and he reciprocates in some way. I mean, just in a general way. So you feel that there is a relationship, a give and take in it. Yeah. And usually, we will say that Krishna is giving, but most living entities in this world just wish to take. And if you just take, that is a sign of what? What is the word for someone who just takes? There's a few words, perhaps, but what? What? I can't hear anyone.
Selfish.
Greedy. Ungrateful. Inconsiderate. Yes. Sycophant. Any other qualities in Krishna? Yes. Or in someone that makes you want to have a relationship? So he accepts you. What do you mean by that? Yeah, but it depends how bad the bad is. Like if you're, part of your bad is you like to kill him all the time and steal his money. Yeah, okay. We have our individuality. Yes. He understands us. And he still loves us. If we can be assured of that, then we'll feel very secure in this world. Because sometimes we dream about a person, and we have so much affection for them. Then when we get to know them and understand them, we don't want to deal with them anymore. But Krishna is not like that. And in fact, his quality is Aho pakiyam stanakalakutam jighamsiyad pi yapi kam lebhegatim datri ucheto datonyam kamba dayalum sharanam brajema. That he sees only the good. He saw that Putana was just coming to him. Even she was coming to kill him. She was coming as a wet nurse to feed him her breast milk. Even though she was coming to kill him, she was still coming to offer him her breast to drink. And Krishna accepted that. The little bit of good. And he didn't see the horrible thing that was actually in her consciousness. So this is Krishna. So come vada alam sharanam brajema. But how could one find a more wonderful Lord than Krishna to surrender to. Lebhegetim Datri. And she told Tatanyam that he awarded Putana, he rewarded her by giving her the position of nurse in the spiritual world like mother. So this is very wonderful. He sees the good. When we deal with people, we really respect them when they see the good in us. Yes, we tend to respect people and have affection for them and trust them when they see the good in us. Is that a fact, do you think? We like them when they see the good in us. So it's natural. So naturally we should also try to be like that, to see the good in others. And then we will be happy in this world. And it is said that Gopal Bhatta Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it mentions that he would not listen to or hear the faults of any devotee, even if they were true. He did not want to hear those kind of things. So he was living aloof in Vrindavan and living like that. When one's managing or living in a community, you have to hear so many things. It's just you have to. But we should basically really like to hear the good about people. I find you put your consciousness in your heart, and next time someone is just gossiping and bah, 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 speaking really badly about someone, you can feel your heart go. And then when someone is speaking sweetly about someone, that this something really nice happened and this person did that, you can feel the heart just like blossom. And in fact, this is a trick, a technique that we learned in teaching. Sometimes when teaching young children, you'd come to class and you'd be in a terrible mood. And when you're in a terrible mood, the last thing you want to do is deal with all the children. They're running around, they're doing this and that. And they only, when you're in a terrible mood, they only do terrible things. That's how you perceive it. But then the technique is, you have to start seeing the good that they're doing. So you start complimenting them. Oh, and how can you compliment them when they're all doing only terrible things? Because your mind is like that. So, as we used to say, sometimes you'd have to say things like, oh, you're breathing so nicely. Great job of breathing today. And by just putting the mind on the positive, it's quite staggering. What happens is your consciousness changes, and then you see all the good that they're doing. And then they're only doing good when your consciousness is good. One time I was talking to one very experienced book distributor who was traveling all over the world and he was distributing books. So he was telling me, Perth, we were in Perth, he said, Perth is such a terrible place for book distribution. No one ever wants to buy a book. And for like 3 or 4 days he said that. And then on the fifth day, he said, he came in like this, very shy. And he said, actually, Perth is a really good place for book distribution. I was just in a bad mood for the last 4 or 5 days. Atmavan manyate jagat. So in any case, let us go back to the Bhagavatam here. We're reading from text 42. We finished that one, I believe. Yes or no? 42 today. So Malayadwaj became greatly realized. And 42 explains, he could thus observe that the Supersoul was sitting by his side, that Krishna was just by his side, the side of the soul, and that he, as the individual soul was sitting by the side of the super soul. Since both were together, there was no need for separate interests. Thus he ceased from such activities. This is also described in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Dva imau purusha loke chara akshara evacha chara savabhutani kutosto akshara ujjate. That there are two kinds of living entities in this world, the perfect and the imperfect, the fallible and the infallible. And the difference between them is that the perfected living entities, perfected souls, they are one with Krishna in desire. They have no separate interest. They want to satisfy Krishna because they are together with Krishna. They are perfected and therefore they wish only to satisfy Him. When we wish to satisfy ourselves, we are never happy. And to become fixed in that realization that I want to satisfy Krishna is a very powerful position in bhakti. Prabhupada's purport. In the advanced stage of devotional service, the devotee does not see anything separate between his own interests and those of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Both interests become one, for the devotee does not act for a separate interest. Whatever he does in the interest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At that time, he sees everything in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything. Having attained this stage of understanding, he sees no distinction between the spiritual and material worlds. Why? What is the understanding that he had reached? What? He's in everything. And nothing is separate from Krishna. And everything belongs to Krishna. And therefore everything should be used for Krishna. So when one is fixed in that mentality that everything is Krishna's, for Krishna's use, then Vishwapona Sukhayate, this whole material world becomes a joyful place. When we try to lord it over material nature, to use it for ourselves, then it is a constant struggle for existence in this world. It is a struggle. And that is the definition of the material world, where the living entities, everyone, is trying to be the lord of all they survey. In the spiritual world, there is an acknowledgement that Krishna is the Lord. He is the center. And everyone is to act to please Him with everything and in every way. And it's based on love for Krishna. 43. So he was actually on that platform. What a relief to give up this mentality in the material world that I am the Lord. It's a demonic mentality. Ishwaraham. I am the controller. Ham bogi. Everything is meant for my enjoyment. So trying to control for the purpose of enjoying, how much anxiety does that cause? Complete anxiety. 43. The daughter of King Vidarbha accepted her husband all in all as the supreme. She gave up all sensual enjoyment and in complete renunciation followed the principles of her husband who was so advanced. Thus she remained engaged in his service. So now Prabhupada explains something that had been hinted at before, because Malayadwaj was a great devotee and he gave bhakti to his daughter. And he is guru, he is spiritual master. So Prabhupada will explain this. Figuratively, King Malayadwaj is the spiritual master and his wife, Vidarbha, is the disciple. The disciple accepts the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Guru Vastak, Shakshadhari Twena, one directly accepts the guru The spiritual master is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should accept the spiritual master not in the sense that the Mayavadi philosophers do, but in the way recommended here. Since the spiritual master is the most confidential servant of the Lord, he should be treated exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Does that mean that if we should feed our spiritual master 54 times a day? And in 12 hours, that's how many times? That's more like every 10 minutes you bring him a big, big thing of rice, and you change his dress so many times a day, and he's maybe doing something, and you stop him, and you put him to the side, and you want to, because you have to offer arti to him, and bathe him right now, pouring water over his head. And then he has, say if he has 1,000 disciples, he has 1,000 people doing that, all at the same time, and each one to offer him 54 preparation, 54 times a day food. So what does it mean? Shakshad hari tvainasamasta sastre. What does it mean? Yeah, his instructions. Instructions. We accept that he's representing Krishna for us. Krishna is so kindly revealed himself to us because we cannot hear the Supersoul. Malaya Dwaj was in direct contact with the Supersoul. Just wait one second. He was in direct contact with the Supersoul, but we cannot hear the Chaitya Guru, the internal guide, the Supersoul. We cannot hear him. Usually we hear the mind, or sometimes Krishna gives us some inspiration from within. But very often the mind, just like if we have a radio, and when you're in, if you're listening to a shortwave radio, you're getting messages from so many different places. So similarly, we get so many voices. You do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. So many ideas come to the mind. So many moods. So very difficult to get clear instructions from the Supersoul. One has to be pure. So the Supersoul manifests as the devotee, as the spiritual master, to instruct us on behalf of Krishna. He should be treated exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master should never be neglected or disobeyed like an ordinary person. So someone can take this one sentence and build the whole philosophy on the one sentence. He should be treated exactly like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said he should be treated exactly. But that Shastra shouldn't be used like that, and Prabhupada's words shouldn't be used like that. Rather, the whole thing has to be studied. Because in one place Prabhupada will say one thing, another place Prabhupada will say another thing. So one has to understand the length and breadth of the instructions and then assimilate them. And then one can speak authoritatively about Prabhupada said and Krishna said and the Bhagavatam says. So, and therefore there is the saying, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So, therefore, we want to study the Bhagavatam from the beginning to the end and not just get a little knowledge, because that is dangerous. But yet, one spiritual master cannot be minimized either. I heard Prabhupada once say that, and he was talking about the spiritual master. Everyone knows that the deity is made out of stone or marble. It's not that it's not. But to think that the deity is only stone and marble, this is aparad. Because Krishna is fully manifesting in that. Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, is fully manifesting in this deity. Because deity, of course, the word in English, in Sanskrit, it's Acha Vigraha. But in English, it means literally God, deity, Dios. It means God. So Prabhupada said when the Muslims attacked, they broke the deities, thinking they were breaking God. But no, they could, may have, and you see this even in, you go to Radha Govinda temple, and you see how every the delicate carvings on the side, they're all cut up. This the Muslims did because they didn't like to see any of the forms of demigods like that, and they would break the deities. The word, English word, iconoclast, literally means a breaker of the deities, of the icons. So, so similarly, the spiritual master is a person. He's a human. One spiritual master. But to think he's only that, that Krishna isn't, he's not representing Krishna and minimizing words, etc. This is where it's an apparat. So even with Prabhupada, when we talk about the spiritual master must be perfect, it is a tricky subject, because someone could say, well, I saw your Prabhupada was wearing glasses, so his vision wasn't perfect, so he's not perfect. Or sometimes when Prabhupada would speak Bhagavad Gita verses, or Bhagavatam verses, they weren't the same that's in the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita. There would be some words that are different. Is this an imperfection? Is this an imperfection? So one time Prabhupada was asked this question, what does it mean that the spiritual master knows everything? So there's a Sanskrit verse that I don't remember, I don't know, where he says, to know Krishna. If you know Krishna, it means you know everything. Huh? Yes. Bhavati. I remember only the last word, Bhavati. It means to know everything, but it doesn't mean that you know how many atoms necessarily, how many atoms are in here, and here, and this and that, or everything, every sloka of all the Puranas and all the Vedas and everything. No, it doesn't mean you know everything. It means you know Krishna. And Prabhupada, when asked the question, he said it means that he knows how to preach. That's how he's perfect, because he knows how to preach. So then, this was on a morning walk. So then some of the devotees said, you asked Prabhupada about his perfection. That's offense. So then the devotee, it was Jai Jyoti Maharaj, said, is it offensive to ask Prabhupada? Is this offensive to ask those questions? And Prabhupada said, no, not offensive, just ignorant. So ignorance is not an offense, but we should get knowledge. We should know everything in its perspective. The proper conclusion, siddhanta, on everything. And if we don't ask questions, we remain in ignorance. Because sometimes these points are subtle and not easy to understand. So he should be treated exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual master should never be neglected or disobeyed like an ordinary person. And that's really the clarifying sentence that explains it. He should not be neither be neglected nor disobeyed like an ordinary person. And this can't be foolishly done. There was one devotee who was serving his spiritual master, and he was living next door to his disciple. And his disciple had cooked something for him. And then he took out a picture and he offered it to him, the picture. And after a few hours, it was already so late. And the devotee was one serving his spiritual master. He was so hungry already. So he went and said, you were supposed to cook something for me. And he said, I did. And I offered it to you. What do you think? In other words, one has to have some practical intelligence. Even when Prabhupada was ill, he couldn't eat because he had no digestion. And then he asked the devotees to bring up, because all the every day prasadam was being offered him on the altar. So he said, "Let me bring up the full plate of prasadam. I want to see what I'm eating today." He was saying, "In." So one has to have some practical common sense, but it is not so easy to balance that with Shastra sometimes, because we see something common sense and it may not be correct. So we have to balance Shastra with practical sense, and if we can do that properly, that is called wisdom or vigyan. Okay, text 44. So the daughter of King Vidarbha, who is the daughter of King Vidarbha in her previous life? She wore old garments, so very different from her mood as Paranjana. So why is that? Well, first we'll read the verse and ask the question. And she was lean and thin because of her vows of austerity. Since she did not arrange her hair, it became entangled and twisted in locks. Although she remained always near her husband, she was silent, as silent and unagitated as the flame of an undisturbed fire. What does that mean? That she was as silent and unagitated as the flame as an undisturbed fire. What does that mean? What is the image that brings up? What is the image? What is the image of a flame? Think of a flame. There is nothing disturbing. There is no wind, and the flame of the fire is burning and not flickering. So that is the example given in which book about the mind? Yes, the Bhagavad Gita. The mind can become that peaceful, but it has to be free from the modes of passion and ignorance. Has anyone ever experienced that much of a peaceful mind, that the mind is perfectly steady and not agitated in any circumstance? Don't answer that question. Sorry, because then it's putting everyone on the spot. She was silent and unagitated. In other words, by serving her pure devotee husband, her mind became perfectly peaceful. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read the beginning. When one begins to burn firewood, there is smoke and agitation in the beginning. Although there are so many disturbances in the beginning, once the fire is completely set, the firewood burns steadily. Similarly, when both husband and wife follow the regulative principles of austerity, they remain silent and are not agitated by sex impulse. At such a time, both husband and wife are benefited spiritually. One can attain this stage of life by completely giving up a luxurious mode of life. So this, especially Prabhupada explains in the purport, is vanaprastha life, where because brahmachari life is meant for study and learning. Householder life is meant for charity. And vanaprastha life is meant for austerity. And sannyasi is meant for preaching. So by austerity, Prabhupada says, in other words, as we heard before, he was performing such severe austerities for what purpose? To become detached from the enjoying spirit, which so much captivates the mind. And when the mind surrenders to whatever is happening as Krishna's mercy, then one becomes peaceful. The mind becomes peaceful. But if one is trying to change always material nature and control and enjoy, then the mind is never peaceful. So how do we get from here to there? Here, the unpeaceful situation where the mind is always disturbed, to the peaceful situation. Yes?
Obviously.
Yes? Practice and renunciation, detachment. What else? Practice of what?
Practice of 64 items.
Yes, so the whole process of Krishna consciousness is this should come as a result of the surrender to Krishna that this entails. So she became advanced. We heard how he became advanced. Now by serving, she becomes advanced. Now who does she represent in the analogy? The disciple. And he represents the spiritual master. Prabhupada just explained this in his purport to text 43. So if one becomes fixed in devotionally serving, in that way one becomes peaceful and pure. The daughter of King Vidarbha continued as usual to serve her husband, who was seated in a steady posture until she could ascertain that he had passed away from his body. When she was serving her husband, so he was meditating for 365 years, 100 years, so it was 3,650 years, right? Right? Do I have my calculation proper? That's 1 year. No, that's... So, too many years. So she was, as she was serving her husband by massaging his legs, she could feel that his feet were no longer warm and could thus understand that he had already passed from the body. She felt great anxiety about being left alone, bereft of her husband's company. She felt exactly as the deer feels upon being separated from its mate. Being now alone and a widow in the forest, the daughter of Vidarbha began to lament, incessantly shedding tears which soaked her breasts and crying very loudly. So why was she crying? So we mentioned the serving the spiritual master, but this analogy of the wife serving the husband brings a deeper point. Why was she crying? She felt, Prabhupada explained, she felt that like a deer, a female deer who had lost her mate, bereft, separated. Why was she crying? Because she had nowhere to warm her hands anymore, and she was alone in the cold forest.
It's her spiritual master.
Yes, but why is she crying?
She was very attached.
And why was she attached?
Because she was serving him all this time.
And why was she serving him all this time? But why was she? Yes, but yes, true. All this is true. I'm asking the most obvious question, not the most obvious answer. Yes, she loved him. Because that's the meaning of attached to him, and she's serving him, and he sheltered her. All the qualities that we describe that make someone want to develop a relationship and love another person, this was their relationship. She sheltered him. Naturally, when someone gives you shelter, you feel so much affection, so grateful. Naturally, when someone loves you, you feel so much love to them. Naturally, when they give you the most valuable thing, naturally, you love them. Isn't that? That is natural, yes? So she began to cry very loudly. Gopal, could you now demonstrate for us what it is crying very loudly? You don't want the attention right now. Okay. Crying very loudly. Because it is the most natural thing to do. The person who is your shelter that you love. What are you going to... You feel like... That's what the female deer, she's helpless. And she feels unsheltered. The person who you love is no longer there to give you shelter, and therefore she's crying. You're not going to sit here, I'm just teasing you. Maybe you are. No, impossible. Come, Gopal. Now why does he want to sit with his father and not with Brijan, the teacher? Why? Huh? relationship, but not relationship, loving relationship, a shelter. And what happens when the child can't find his mother or father? Huh? They cry, just like. It is the most natural thing. And even if the child is, the mother is there, especially mother, or if, and they're distracted and their mind's not on the child can perceive this and they start whining and demanding attention also. Figuratively, Prabhupada said, the queen is supposed to be the disciple of the king. Thus, when the mortal body of the spiritual master expires, his disciples should cry exactly as the queen cries when the king leaves his body. However, the disciple and spiritual master are never separated because the spiritual master always keeps company with the disciple as long as the disciple follows strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. So these purports are extremely important. They're extremely personal from Prabhupada. Extremely personal. They have very deep meanings and they are full of his emotion. This is called association of vani, words. Physical presence is called vapu. As long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master. And when the spiritual master is no longer physically existing, the disciple should serve the instructions of the spiritual master. So again, it takes some practical intelligence when Prabhupada says, as long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master. So just imagine, the spiritual master has 1,000 disciples, and all of them say, right now I'm going to serve the body of my spiritual master, and they all start either feeding him, or bathing him, or massaging him, or dressing him, or something like that. So there has to be some common sense and wisdom in understanding what Prabhupada means. What does Prabhupada mean? When the spiritual master is present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master. It means one thing is one should not neglect the physical body of the spiritual master, just like the foolish disciple that we spoke of who neglected the body and offered the food to the picture and let the body of the spiritual master starve. But the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, we were really trained in Vani Seva. Prabhupada would always speak on this point. That the serving the vani or the instructions is more important than serving the vapu, the body, or being with the body even. But yet, and therefore there was, and Prabhupada, I never personally heard him say it, but we've heard that he said that, I can't remember the exact quotation that I had heard even. But we were trained in the Vani Seva, but let me tell you that Vapu was really, really powerful. And therefore, to give that association of his Vapu, Prabhupada continuously traveled all over the world. Not continuously, but he would travel all over the world to inspire the devotees. Because his transcendental presence, when he was there in the Vapu, also contained the Vani, because he was always instructing also. But the point that Vani Seva is more important than Vapu Seva, or service of the body, is what? What is the point? Yes, but I would a little more generally state it. Yes. Yes, it's more like that. That the Vapu, association with the Vapu, is really out of your control. And we saw this from when Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, he left and went to San Francisco, and the devotees were shocked because they thought he was always going to be with them, but it wasn't true. He left. And then really the source of their Krishna consciousness strength left because they weren't mature enough to follow Jasvani. They were just really, really beginners. And on the other hand, although everyone in the movement and ISKCON cried and cried when Prabhupada left, there was an illusion, I would say, that we will follow Prabhupada's vani, and we will preach Krishna consciousness just serving Prabhupada. But it didn't turn out to be as easy as that without Prabhupada's transcendental physical presence on this planet. So much Maya entered. So much difficulty entered the society. So there is a balance on this point that I'm presenting. That Vani is so much more important than Vapu because Vapu is not in your control. One time a devotee said to Prabhupada, "I only want to sit by your lotus feet." And Prabhupada said, "That is not very easy. My lotus feet are always moving." So this training in Vani Seva is so important. But Vapu, once dealing with, because he's right there, and Prabhupada was so incredibly powerful. Incredibly powerful. But yet, what to do? When the Vapu isn't there, we worship the Vani, and ultimately we have to worship the Vani. There's only a few souls who can stay, who either get the opportunity and are also pure enough. Because it wasn't easy to be with Prabhupada, because he was very completely focused, intensely, only on serving Krishna. There was no room for Maya there. There was no gradual process. And sometimes he was extremely heavy. I read an analysis of how nowadays when Christians like to think of Jesus, they like to think of him as someone, as somewhat, you know, just very sweet and feminine, somewhere between Saint Francis and Buddha and a whole mixture of different personalities. But they forget how heavy he actually was. So similarly, people can very easily, devotees can very easily have a very romantic understanding of what it was like in Prabhupada's presence. He was extremely heavy and extremely demanding. Extremely so. Extremely sweet. Extremely selfless. But it was like being close to the fire. And it is very hot close to the fire. Very hot. And if you are not fire or ready to become fire, what will happen? You will burn to ashes. So therefore there is an old saying, I don't know the exact reference, but the advice is to keep a distance, to view the spiritual master and the deity from a distance. Huh? I'm saying it's his advice because I can't remember the exact reference.
Advice,
not vice. Because there is a tendency, if one is close to the deity and doing deity worship, what's the tendency? Not offense. To become familiar and think, oh, the deity is made out of marble and wood. I've seen one deity where they put the flute inside and never mind. Hare Krishna. But there is a tendency to become familiar in the distance, when the curtains open, then it's one thing. It's more difficult to be there, and the same thing with serving the spiritual master, to be close, it's very difficult. Such a tendency to see him as an ordinary man. Because you'll see some characteristics that ordinary people have. One Prabhupada once criticized the when Prabhupada first started getting his massage, a devotee who was massaging him became overly familiar, and that's why it's very difficult to be the servant of spiritual master. His tendency is to get overly familiar and then be neglectful and disdainful and contemptuous, because familiarity breeds contempt. So Prabhupada said he thought that I was dependent on his massage, Prabhupada said in a critical, very critical mood. And then that devotee quickly left. Very quickly left. So Vani Vapu. Ultimately we're left with Vani, and in the service of the Vani, then one can realize the spiritual master's presence. Like, as Prabhupada said, someone asked him, do you experience the association of your spiritual master? And his reply was, yes, or else how could I go on? In other words, it was a constant meditation for Prabhupada, and he was truly the acharya of this point of serving the spiritual master. Constant meditation as servant, as loving servant. Not only servant, but loving servant. And to be loving servant, one has to deeply appreciate the extent of the shelter and the gift. And as we were talking about, and everyone mentioned, appreciate the depth and the value of the instructions from having followed them. Because the value of the product of Krishna consciousness isn't realized unless one becomes very deep oneself. And that only comes through when it's directed towards the spiritual master by following instructions, then unlimited appreciation will naturally flow towards him. Okay, text 48. So she said to her husband, Malayadwaj, the spiritual master, that exalted devotee who had just left his body, O best of kings, please get up. Get up. Just see this world surrounded by water and infested with rogues and so-called kings. This world is very much afraid, and it is your duty to protect her. Here is Prabhupada's purport, which describes the mission of an acharya. Whenever an acharya comes following the superior orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his representative, he establishes the principles of religion as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita. Religion means abiding by the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Religious principles begin from the time one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the acharya's duty to spread a bona fide religious system and induce everyone to bow down before the Supreme Lord. One executes the religious principles by rendering devotional service, specifically the nine items like hearing, chanting, and remembering. Unfortunately, when the acharya disappears, rogues and non-devotees take advantage and immediately begin to introduce unauthorized principles in the name of so-called swamis, yogis, philanthropists, welfare workers, and so on. Actually, human life is meant for executing the orders of the Supreme Lord, and this is stated in Bhagavad Gita 9:34. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evyasyasi yuktva evam atmanam madparayana. So this is what religion means. This is what sarvadhamam pratyaja. These are the practical activities of full surrender to Krishna. Engage your mind in always thinking of me and become my devotee. Offer obeisances and worship me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. The main business of human society is to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at all times, to become his devotees, to worship the Supreme Lord, and to bow down before him. So this is the essence or the beginning of religion. The essential practice is surrender, which Prabhupada is describing here as in referring to Manmana Bhava Madbhakto. To become a devotee, to bow down, to surrender, to admit our complete dependence upon him. Without that, bhakti doesn't begin. There has to be a surrender of the soul, a placing one's self in the hands of Krishna. Gotripte varanam tata, putting oneself under the protection of Krishna. The Acharya, the authorized representative of the Supreme Lord, establishes these principles. But when he disappears, things once again become disordered. We won't go into details in relationship to the kind of disorders that can come. But Prabhupada is giving the principle that the Acharya establishes the principle of surrender, and after that, so many other principles of religiosity infiltrate and come in, because this is very difficult for a soul, a conditioned soul, to give himself. So, these other principles are dharma projita kaitava paramam namat saranam satam. These other principles that are introduced are not the principles of the Bhagavatam. This is not the principles of Bhagavad Dharma. So the Acharya establishes the principles of Bhagavad Dharma. But when he disappears, things once again become disordered. The perfect disciples of the Acharya try to relieve the situation by sincerely following the instructions of the spiritual master. So this is the Vani Seva that we were just hearing. The worship of the spiritual master through following his instructions. At the present moment, practically the entire world is afraid of rogues and non-devotees. What does that mean? Do people walk around fearfully thinking, oh, I'm afraid of non-devotees? In the world outside of India, people are more afraid of the devotees. What does that mean? It means, practically speaking, that the things, the persons, that people are actually afraid of, the people who are actually causing fear in the hearts of the individuals, actually they are non-devotees and rogues. They're not surrendered to Krishna. And therefore, Prabhupada explains, this Krishna consciousness movement is started to save the world from irreligious principles. Everyone should cooperate with this movement in order to bring about actual peace and happiness in the world. So the false religious principles are irreligious principles, and the real religious principles is sarvadhamam pratyaja, mamekam charanam vrajam, om manmana bhava madbhakto. Text 49. That most obedient wife thus fell down at the feet of her dead husband and began to cry pitifully in that solitary forest. Thus the tears rolled down from her eyes. Purport. Very simple purport, but not mechanically spoken. Just as a devoted wife becomes afflicted at the passing away of her husband, when a spiritual master passes away, the disciple becomes similarly bereaved. He has lost his beloved's shelter. And he feels unprotected. But what did Arjuna do? We read this in the first canto. Very important instructions. When Arjuna returned from Dwarka, Yudhisthira was fearing, he had seen signs and symptoms that Kali Yuga had begun, which meant that Krishna had departed from this world, and then Arjuna came back. And Arjuna was completely bereft. He was completely miserable. He looked like he had lost everything. And indeed he had, because Krishna had left the planet. So Yudhisthira began instructing him, or questioning him, what is the cause? How is this? How is that? How was your time in Dwarka? How is this person? How is that person? And Arjuna didn't reply. Because Krishna had departed. And what did Arjuna do? What did he do? Where did he find Krishna? How did he remove the impurities that had come to his heart? How did he gain his solace? Yes. He meditated, he thought about Krishna's instructions. He thought about Krishna. He had instructed him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And he took shelter of those instructions. He lost the Vapu Seva. But he couldn't lose the Vani Seva. He could lose it, but that it cannot be forcibly lost. It can be seduced away by Maya, but it cannot be actually lost. If one is holding on tightly, it'll take shelter of it. So therefore, in that sense, without in any way minimizing Vapu, which again, as we were saying about in the presence of Prabhupada, that Vapu was incredibly powerful. But Vani is more important because Vapu, whether we can associate with a Vapu or not, is not in our control. But everyone has the opportunity to associate with Vani. The Matajis could not, although Prabhupada was quite liberal, the Matajis could not associate with Prabhupada in the same way that the men, the sannyasis, could. But Vani, regardless of one's body, male, female, this, that, old, young, regardless, this is the great, or one of the elements of the great equality in Krishna consciousness. There is a free access to the instructions of Krishna and Prabhupada and the spiritual masters. But we have to take it. We have to take it strongly and take shelter. Text 50. She then prepared a blazing fire with firewood and placed the dead body of her husband upon it. When this was finished, she lamented severely. She didn't just say, oh, I have his Vani. No problem. Vani Seva better than Vapu Seva? No. It is not an intellectual thing. It is love. It is shelter. It is great, great deep affection. So she lamented severely and prepared herself to perish in the fire with her husband. Listen to what Prabhupada says. I'll read just the second. First, in the first half of the purport, Prabhupada talks about the sati ritual which she is going to perform. And we just heard how someone else performed this. Who was it? That was before the last one. There's been many people on this canto. Huh? Yes, Prithu Maharaj's wife. So Prabhupada speaks about that, but Prabhupada's making a comparison here with the between the devoted wife and the devoted disciple. A devoted disciple of the spiritual master would rather die with the spiritual master than fail to execute the spiritual master's mission. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down upon this earth to reestablish the principles of religion, So his representative, the spiritual master, also comes to reestablish religious principles. It is the duty of the disciples to take charge of the mission of the spiritual master and execute it properly. What does that mean? What is the very important in there? The disciples should take charge, but they should take charge as disciples. They should never, ever move internally. There may be someone, so many people later who say Guru Maharaj or Gurudev, but they themselves never, ever think of themselves in that way. They only think of themselves as disciples and servants of their spiritual master. So they take charge of the mission in that mood to serve his vani, to serve his desires, to serve his instructions, and execute it properly. Otherwise, Prabhupada continues, the disciple should decide to die along with the spiritual master. So what does that mean? We look at our failures and we should immediately kill ourselves? Perhaps, but that is not what Prabhupada means. He's going to give it in other words, to execute the will of the spiritual master, the disciple should be willing, be prepared to lay down his life and abandon all personal considerations. In other words, one should take up fulfilling his desire as one's life and soul and abandon all personal considerations. That means personal selfishnesses, self-centeredness, and become fully a servant. Again, surrender. Again, out of affection. And the final text we'll read today, and we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. Yes, one more, 51. It's listed as 51, but it doesn't... I can see how it... We'll hear about the speaking of the Brahmana next. My dear king, one Brahmin who... So she's there, just about ready to... She's lost her shelter. She's crying. This is very, 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 very important. She's lost her shelter. And it is terrifying. Even though one may have imbibed so much vani, instruction, to lose one's shelter is terrifying. Because one doesn't know anything except the current situation of having the shelter directly in front of us, before us. So it's terrifying. And she's crying and lamenting. And she's placed her husband's body on the funeral pyre. And she herself, in great lamentation of her shelterless condition, which is the proper mood of a disciple, she herself is about to enter the fire. But then, one Brahmana, who was an old friend of King Paranjana, came to that place and began to pacify the queen with sweet words. So we'll read approximately 2/3 of Prabhupada's purport, and then tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall hear the sweet words of the Brahmana. Purport. The appearance of an old friend in the form of a Brahmana is very significant. In his Paramatma feature, Krishna is the old friend of everyone. According to Vedic injunctions, Krishna is sitting with the living entity side by side. According to the Shruti mantra, Dvasupana Suyuja Sakkaya, the Lord is sitting within the heart of every living entity as Sudit, the best friend. The Lord is always eager to have the living entity come home back to Godhead. Sitting with the living entity as witness, the Lord gives him all chances to enjoy himself materially. But whenever there is an opportunity, the Lord gives good counsel and advises the living entity to abandon trying to become happy through material adjustment and instead turn his face towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto Him. When one becomes serious to follow the mission, so that was the general instruction that Prabhupada gave about the super soul. General instruction. But here, more specific, following the lines of the particular Bhagavatam section and the purports. When one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, his resolution, his resolve, his determination, his seriousness is tantamount, equal to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Prabhupada says. In that, following the instructions of the spiritual master, one will find Krishna. That's what Prabhupada is saying. It's tantamount to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As explained before, this means meeting the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the instructions of the spiritual master. This is technically called Vani Seva. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur states in his Bhagavad Gita commentary on the verse Vyavya Satmika Buddhi Ekeha Kurunandana that one should serve the words of the spiritual master. The disciple must stick to whatever the spiritual master orders. Simply by following on that line, one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma, appeared before the Queen as a Brahmana. But why didn't he appear in his original form as Sri Krishna? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur remarks that unless one is very highly elevated in loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot see him as he is. Him, meaning Krishna. Nonetheless, if one sticks to the principles enunciated by the spiritual master, somehow or other, he is in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, because one may not be fully qualified to see Krishna, doesn't mean that Krishna will neglect the person. It's not black or white, all or nothing. If one follows sincerely, according to his ability, the instructions of one's spiritual master, somehow or another, Prabhupada says, he is in the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna will care for such a devotee in all circumstances when one is doing Vani Seva. And this is also true even in the presence of one's spiritual master when his Vapu isn't right with one. If one will seriously follow the Vani of such a thing, then Krishna will personally care for such a devotee. Because after all, the spiritual master is representing Krishna. He's not independent. He's Krishna's representative, like a bank teller. So there is the guarantee, warranty of the bank behind him. So he protects such a devotee and cares for him. Since the Lord is in the heart, he can advise a sincere devotee from within. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Pratipurvagam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mamupiyanti Te. So Pratipurvagam is the highest form, and Vani Seva is one that we all have access to have Krishna instruct. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. In conclusion, so when Prabhupada says in conclusion, even though it's the in conclusion of the class also, and this will be the last thing we read, we should all listen very carefully. In conclusion, if a disciple is very serious to execute the mission of the spiritual master, he immediately associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Vani or Vapu. This is the only secret of success in seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of being eager to see the Lord in some bush of Vrindavan, while at the same time engaging in sense gratification, if one instead sticks to the principle of following the words of the spiritual master, he will see the Supreme Lord without difficulty. Heavy. Guru means heavy, and Prabhupada was that kind of a guru. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Vaishnavi ki jai.